to the political cesspool known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome to the Political Cesspool radio program. Happy Independence Day, everyone. It is Saturday, the 4th of July, and wouldn't you know that the 4th of July would have to fall on a Saturday just so we'd have to come in and work tonight. Welcome to the show. No, honestly, we're happy to be with you, and actually quite thrilled to be with you on such a joyous occasion. I guess it's still joyous. This country doesn't really resemble much of the America that the founding fathers fight to give us and the freedoms that they won for us, but we will always honor and respect the gallantry of their sacrifice, and here we are in Memphis, Tennessee tonight, coming to you from AM 1380 WLRM Studios, while everyone else is shooting fireworks, firing up the barbecue, eating hot dogs and hamburgers. Keith Alexander and I are sitting here, buckled in to the chairs in front of our microphones, ready to rock and roll, and hopefully, if we're lucky, we're a part of your festivities and celebrations this evening. Keith, how are you tonight? Keith Alexander, still waiting to hear from him. Well, yeah, Keith, are you still with us?
Traditional.
There he is. It's hard to get that microphone to work sometimes. How's it going, Keith?
Everything's great. I tell you, I've got.
Well, you were coming through my headset just a second ago.
I know that you've had some disruptions in yours with a death of a relative recently, but you know, I'm glad that you're able to soldier forward and come through on the radio again today.
Well, you know, it's you just mentioned it, and I appreciate you remembering. Yeah, my uncle passed yesterday at about 10 a.m., very close to him. And as a matter of fact, my family, unlike most families in America today, are not having a 4th of July celebration because of that passing, and because I needed to come in and work tonight on the program. I spent last night in South Haven, Mississippi with my aunt and my cousins and my mother and father and wife and brother. And he was a very close uncle, Keith. And I know Mike's looking down from heaven on us tonight. There was never a 4th of July in my, this is my 29th 4th of July. And the previous 28, he was there for. He never missed a holiday, never missed a Sunday coming over and visiting with my mother, his sister. And it is sad. But we continue on, and, you know, that's what family's all about. You carry on the name, you carry on the blood, and hopefully, you know, I'll be able to contribute to that sooner rather than later. But, Keith, how's your fourth?
Everything's great. I'm just relaxing and, you know, just thinking, basically meditating a little bit about the state of our nation on this 4th of July and great peril that we seem to be in, and about losing the rights that we've all taken for granted, at least throughout my lifetime.
Well, I think, Keith, you bring up a very important balance there. Certainly we should respect and admire and remember in great fondness, with great fondness, while we celebrate the 4th of July. But then you think it was the 4th of July in 1863 where the Confederates were retreating, beaten from Gettysburg, and it's just never been good since then. I mean, it's never been as good as it was before in terms of the freedoms that this nation is supposed to guarantee us, and they are seemingly hanging by a thread as we head into the evening of the 4th of July, 2009, with hate crimes bills standing at the ready. Reverend Ted Pike will be on in the second hour of tonight's program to talk about that. There's just so much we're facing that even just a short 40 or 50 years ago, Keith, would have seemed unimaginable. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. Tonight really is, though, by and large, a night of good. It's a night where people are in a festive spirit, so we're not going to do our part to bring it down. Not much is worse than a unhappy drunk, and as people are listening tonight, undoubtedly enjoying a little wine, a little beer, and they should. People work hard in America. They deserve one night, at least one night, with friends and family where they can kick back and remember everything that was good about this country, and hopefully this show will be able to lift them up, lift their spirits at some point this evening. But I tell you, Keith, if they wanted their spirits lifted, all they had to do was tune in last week. Last week's show was one for the archives, if there ever was one. Absolutely the most fun I've ever had broadcasting this show, and we've been doing it for 5 years. We were there together, Keith, in Jackson, Mississippi. Bill Rowland and I were hosting. You were a face in the crowd. We were at the Council of Conservative Citizens 2009 National Conference. We had a remote broadcast. A big crowd of fans gathered around. You could hear them cheering throughout the show. Our guests included, my goodness, Keith, Sam Dixon, Jared Taylor, Paul Fromm, Gordon Baum, Craig Boddicker, Dr. Tom Sunak, the former Croatian diplomat. So many great personalities on the show, not the least of which were some of the fans in the crowd, and that was a party. That was my 4th of July a week early.
Well, you know, Sam Francis said it best. He said that the Council of Conservative Citizens is the most effective, truly conservative organization in the United States at this time, and it still is. And it was a great opportunity for fellowship and to see that there are other people out there that think like you do, and furthermore, you know, have no hesitation or reluctance whatsoever to encounter and grapple with the tough issues that we face today, and they're effective. And let me just put in this plug for the council. This is an organization that, ladies and gentlemen, that deserves your support. Along with the political cesspool, we're affiliated with them, and we're affiliated with them not for any reason other than the fact that we think they stand for the right things in America.
Well, I think there are
very few organizations that do.
There are very few organizations out there, Keith, that are undiluted when it comes to standing up without retreat, surrender, or apology, as our motto suggests, for Christian ideas and paleoconservative principles. And I think this shows one. The council is certainly another, and you've got great outfits like Liberty News Radio, which gives us the opportunity to broadcast. And there are a few, but there's certainly not many, not nearly many enough. And we had a great time down there broadcasting live from the conference. We were very well received, a lot of fans. If you missed that, obviously the archive is available courtesy of the Liberty News Radio Network. You can get that at their website, libertynewsradio.com, or ours, thepoliticalcesspool.org. And if you come to our website, we've got a lot of great treats for you. A few pictures that were taken at the conference of us with different fans and different personalities that were on the program. A nice picture of my wife and I. She was down there with us, too. So you can go and check that out at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Check out some pictures, listen to the broadcast archives. And we also have some video. And there's more video to come. But one of the people that we had a chance to interview was Craig Boddicker, who made the award-winning documentary A Conversation About Race, in which he basically shatters a lot of the double standards and hypocrisies that are reserved for the public discourse of these sorts of conversations. And it was a great documentary. It was an even better interview that we had with him last week. And you can catch it not only in audio, the audio version, you can catch the video version of our interview with Craig Boddicker right now at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And we will have more videos forthcoming from our time down in Jackson last week. It was just a great time of fellowship, and it's always so rewarding to meet the fans who hold this show dear. And we're going to go to the fan mailbag. This show is going to be a little less structured than our normal broadcast. It is a holiday. I know a lot of people are out and having a good time. And we normally come in here in a three-piece suit and tie. Tonight we've got our collars unbuttoned. We're in the Bermuda shorts and flip-flops. So we're going to have a good time tonight. We're just going to talk to you as if you are our neighbors, and you are. And we're going to have a good time this evening in the cesspool, but it's not going to be quite as organized as our typical broadcast is. We're going to be sharing some fan mail from you, some stories from our personal experiences. We're going to talk about family. We're going to talk about love. We're going to talk about this country, and we're going to do it all over the course of the next 2.5 hours and change. And we are, of course, going to infuse some salient contemporary headlines of the day into our commentaries. But one thing we're going to do right after this next commercial break, Keith, is talk about an experience we had shortly after we returned from Jackson, Mississippi last weekend, in which we were met in Memphis on Tuesday by a newspaper reporter from one of the biggest newspapers in Europe. And we're going to talk about that and our experience with him when the political cesspool continues here this evening on the 4th of July, 2009, here on the Liberty News Radio Network. Keith, we got about a minute to break. I know that was a great time we had on Tuesday, me, you, and Bill.
Yeah, it really couldn't have worked out any better, and it was a very interesting series of events that happened. And, you know, let me just say that, you know, getting back to the council, it's wonderful that we have somebody like Gordon Baum, who has headed the Council of Conservative Citizens now for what, I guess, over
longer than I've been alive, I think.
Yeah, really, for quite a long time, and continues to do an excellent job. Our tip of the hat to him for the great organization that he brings to this particular group. And quite frankly, the fact that we have these stalwarts that go back over a half century in the conservative movement that are still as dedicated as ever is a real tribute to the integrity of these gentlemen.
Well, and it speaks to the continuity. You need continuity, and you got to stand the test of time. They've done it, and now for 5 years, so have we. We'll be back with more. You got to hear this story that happened on Tuesday here in Memphis. We're going to tell it
to
you when the cesspool returns.
The political cesspool, guys. We'll be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool radio program, everyone. James Edwards here with you from Memphis, Tennessee, AM 1380 WLRM Radio, our flagship station. And, of course, we're going out to the ever-growing Liberty News Radio Network audience. I am very pleased to announce, and I think we made mention of the fact last week, that this is a network that is growing and going places in a hurry. And we're very proud to be a part of the team here at LNR. And you might be listening to us from their website, from our own, on satellite, shortwave, AM stations across the country. Who knows? But we're glad you're with us, that's for sure, this holiday edition of the award-winning Cesspool radio program. James Edwards and Keith Alexander here with you. And Keith, we're kind of kicked back tonight. We're just talking to one another and letting the audience hear it more than our structured program, although we will have some issues to bring to everyone's attention and a couple of guests in the second hour especially. But, Keith, when we got back, you know, this is a show, our show, I guess because we are able to, I guess comparatively speaking, articulate the paleoconservative idea better than most. And the way you do that, and it's certainly of no gift or talent of our own, the way you do it is you just do it without apologizing, and that's what the trick that most people can't seem to understand. But we've been able to do that for a number of years now, and we've been able to get an increasing amount of publicity from some very big organizations such as the London Times, Newsweek Magazine, CNN, Fox News, and many others. On Tuesday, you had the chance to join Bill Rowland and myself as we met a reporter who flew in from Germany. He is actually, or was, the political editor of Die Zeit newspaper. He is now the Washington Bureau Chief of Die Zeit, which is a conservative newspaper in Germany that has over 2 million readers. He had taken interest in the program. And, Keith, you fill in the blank.
Well, it was totally impromptu. I got a late phone call, and I don't think you all had, you and Bill had a lot of lead time on this either. I don't know what being a conservative newspaper in Germany amounts to. It probably means that you're somewhere between Lenin and Trotsky on the chart of left to right politically. But we met this fellow. His name was Martin Kling. He seemed to be a very nice gentleman, although I could tell that, you know, there were some attempts to, you know, lure us into some statements that, you know, would basically not work to the credit of the radio program. We were quickly, you know, setting him straight on those things. But it was really interesting. He wanted to see the radio station, and he wanted to go to some of the Confederate parks in Memphis, and we obliged him. And when we were talking to him, for example, we pointed out and took great pains to point out that we're not for racial discrimination in favor of anybody, not for the European-American contingent in America, and not for any minority, blacks, Hispanics, Asians, whoever. And I told him that, you know, in the 50s and the 60s, those positions would have earned you standing as liberal. But in today's world, that puts you on the far right. And I said, that just shows you that it's not we that have changed. It's the cultural center of gravity that has moved so far to the left now that being a person that supports equality basically makes you a member of the far right. and which is kind of astounding, don't you think?
Well, it is, Keith, and I think, again, to reiterate your point you were making with the gentleman, the reporter there, was that certainly we are proud of our cultural heritage here in the Political Cesspool. We have the moniker or the label as a pro-white radio program. And certainly in being pro-white, we are not anti anyone else. We just want to have the same privileges, or not even privileges, but the same rights, I should say, to celebrate our ancestors and heroes and traditions as every other minority or race in this world has. But I think what you were pointing out is that at the base root of it all, what we advocate for on this program, among many other things, is equal opportunity for all, special privileges for none. And that, again, you say, puts you on the far right of the political spectrum now. Whether right or wrong, that's where you end. That's where you end up.
Well, you know, it's not where we'd put ourselves, but that's apparently where our enemies would put us. And, you know, it's amazing to me that every other, like, let's look at Christian faith, for example. No other group of Christians other than white Christians feels that there is something inconsistent with having a strong sense of racial solidarity or ethnic solidarity. For example, black Americans certainly see no inconsistency with being having a sense of racial solidarity with other blacks and being good Christians. Neither do Asian Christians. Neither do Hispanic Christians. But for some reason, white churches and white Christians seem to think that there's something inconsistent, something unholy, something wrong with having some pride in your own antecedents and ancestors.
Well, and Keith, and just saying,
if you're white and a Christian.
Saying something just as simply and well-stated as you just put it would get you labeled a white supremacist by our detractors. And I think, once again, these are the double standards and hypocrisies that we seek to destroy and to put an end to, and hopefully people are beginning to follow our example. If the mailbag is any indication of the influence or encouragement we're giving our audience, well, then we're making a big difference, Keith. But I want you to share one more story. We spent
well,
the better part of 5 hours.
Let me say one more thing before we get off of that topic. The thing was that, you know, I think that, you know, we're not, you know, we're not against anybody. Basically, we want a fair, objective competition for what's good in life, and we feel certain that if you have that type of competition, a fair, objective, by a fair, objective standard, we'll do just fine. What we're worried about is what's obvious, which is that now we are the victims of racial discrimination and ethnic discrimination in America. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people understand that, but the proof is out there and incontrovertible.
Well, white Southern Christian males in particular, your WASPy people, are certainly, I think, more often than not, the recipients of intolerance rather than the proponents of it. And I think
we
even got...
That's a perfect segue into what you were talking about.
Yeah, you know where I want to go with it before we run out of time on in this segment. We took the gentleman... We spent 5 hours with him. We had breakfast with him, checked him into his hotel, went out to the radio station, drove around town. We ended up at a Confederate park, a park that this program played a more than instrumental role in defending. It got us our first claim to fame back in 2005, made a lot of headlines as we went up against Al Sharpton and beat Al Sharpton. And these Confederate parks are still named for their Confederate forebears here in Memphis. But nevertheless, the man wanted to see it. He had read about it. We went there to relay the story. And what happened, Keith?
Well, while we were there and just pointing out, you know, statues and the park and whatnot and other incidental details like that, up walked two white guys with a Confederate flag.
At Confederate Park in downtown Memphis.
And, of course, most of the people sitting on the benches basically doing nothing in the middle of the day were black people, black males for the most part. And as these two fellows walked in there, and that we had nothing to do with these guys, had no idea, it was a surprise to everybody, suddenly one of the black people in the park just raised up, started cursing, started threatening violence and everything against these people for daring to bring a Confederate flag into Confederate Park.
And I think
it was something of a shock to our foreign guest.
It was either. Almost as if it was right on cue. I mean, it was just, we had been talking about reality versus the
perception.
Way things are construed to be in Hollywood, this alter reality that we find in movies. And we got 10 seconds, but I'll tell you what, Keith, the reporter sure got a dose of it and an eyeful of it. And hopefully, when the report comes out in this newspaper in German, we will shed in an objective light. But we stay busy here. We keep fighting for you people, and we reach out, and we're commanding media attention, and you've made it all possible. More to come in the cesspool when we return right after this.
We'll be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get out of this
place. There's never been a 4th of July where I didn't burn at least a couple of my fingers lighting fireworks. So if you're out there tonight, ladies and gentlemen, you got a radio plugged in listening to the cesspool, be careful. Kind word of advice from James Edwards to you. And welcome back to the show. It is the 4th of July, Independence Day, 2009. We are live. Here we are, Keith, working on a holiday. Do we get double time for this or what?
Don't even get single time.
Zero times two is still zero when it comes to our paycheck. But anyway, we have covered a lot of ground tonight. Again, we're taking it easy, kind of kick back to a more relaxed atmosphere than our typical broadcast. Last week, what a great time we had. We kind of recapped some of the things that were during last week's live show from Jackson, made for great radio. We talked about our experience on Tuesday, just, 4 or 5 days ago, a reporter from Germany flew in to interview us about the growing reputation of this radio program and the growing audience that we continue to...
And the phenomenon of conservative talk radio generally.
We are. I mean, we're even getting mentioned in articles in the same breath as Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh now. So the cesspool is going places, and of course it is because of our listening audience that has been allowed to occur. A quick bit of breaking news, not that we do a lot of breaking news, I just don't know how many people have heard about this yet, and I wouldn't have heard about it if I didn't post it to my blog. And you can read about it right now at thepoliticalcesspool.org. But since we do come from Memphis, Tennessee, and this is sort of Tennessee news, but it's national news too, Steve McNair, the former quarterback for the Tennessee Titans, took him to the Super Bowl, was found dead at his apartment in Nashville, shot in the head, and there was a woman there with him also dead. Now, they don't know yet if it's a murder-suicide or a double murder, but nevertheless, quarterback Steve McNair, formerly of the Tennessee Titans, found dead in Nashville moments ago. So you heard it here first on the Political Cesspool. For more information, go to our website. Keith, any comments on that?
Well, I don't know any of the details. I really would be reluctant to comment about that. It's a great tragedy, I'm sure, for Steve McNair's family and for his fans. And quite frankly, I never thought that Steve McNair was, I never had any reason to believe he's anything but a gentleman when he was playing for the Tennessee Titans. I never heard some of the typical stories you would hear about professional athletes associated with him. Let me come back just a moment, if I could, to that that incident that we were discussing at Confederate Park.
Right.
We pointed out to that German reporter, we said, now, despite what you've heard and what the stereotypes are, who is the person threatening violence here and who is not? And of course, it was the black guy that was threatening the two white guys with the Confederate flag. Said, who is profane and who's not? Who's well-behaved and who's not? Who's tolerant and who is not? And he had to admit.
And he did admit.
Exactly what was going on. Now, whether that will ever find its way into his reporting or in his story remains to be seen, but nonetheless, it happened live, unrehearsed, and in person.
It certainly did. If we have any listeners in the audience this evening that can read German or speak German, I come to find out that this newspaper does not have an English version, not even online. So we're going to have to find a German fan at the cesspool to read the article to us. But, you know, I tell you what, Keith, it does show, and we do need to move on from this, but it does show the kind of respect that this show commands, the fact that a newspaper would pay for a reporter to fly all the way to Memphis just and only to talk to us.
And, you know, he's also going to go up there and talk to Pat Buchanan, if he can, in the Pat Buchanan's group, the American Cause. And I'd have to say that's pretty good company to travel in.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do much better than James Edwards, Keith Alexander, and Pat Buchanan. That's pretty much the big three. But, you know, we've had such a good time. And speaking of Pat, you know, we were in Jackson last week. The week before that, we had Roger Devlin on and Kevin McDonald. Dr. Devlin was, of course, reporting live from the Pat Buchanan conference. So we've been covering conferences the last couple of weeks, whether we were there or by proxy. And now we're kind of back and settled into the studio. But, Keith, one thing, and this is the thing I wanted to have you on tonight to talk about as we go behind enemy lines with Keith Alexander now, a very big congressional race, the United States Congress, District 9 here in West Tennessee, the Memphis area, is shaping up. Give us the tail of the tape as if this was a boxing match. In one corner, we have Willie Harrington, the mayor of Memphis, who has served so long. I'm 30 years old now, and he was sworn in when I was in the fifth grade, so you do the math on that. And in the other corner, we have Steve Cohen. Give us the dossiers on these two guys and why this is going to make for a very, very salacious political contest.
Well, you know, this just tells you how discouraging it is to be a conservative in a place like Memphis, Tennessee. It's the Memphis, Tennessee version of Dumb and Dumber, I guess. What we've got is a black racial partisan who is busily trying to show that he is a more partisan black candidate than anyone else, and he's running against a Jewish fella who, again, just turns handsprings and contortions to prove that he is not only a liberal but an ultra-liberal, and is totally at one with the black constituents in Memphis, has nothing to offer to conservatives whatsoever. In fact, he is one who famously and laughably tried to join the black congressional caucus during his first term, and even though he's a white guy, and
was embarrassed in front of the whole country by being,
and it's really, really
denied.
Incredible.
Yeah, I mean, Steve Cohen, the incumbent in this race. Now, Willie Harrington, for whatever reason, is abjuring the realm after 20 years of being governor, mayor of Memphis, and he's running for Congress now for what reason we may never know. But Steve Cohen, he's in his first term. He was just elected because the previous holder of that seat, John Ford, a black politician, was indicted and had to go to jail.
No, it's not John Ford. This was Harold Ford Jr. decided to run for Senate of from Tennessee and lost in a statewide election.
That seat was a Ford heirloom, though, correct?
Yeah. Harold Ford, his father, was one that took it over in 1974, I believe it was, and it was kind of passed down like an ancestral position or something in Europe from one Ford to another until Harold Jr., who is a lawyer and went to the University of Michigan, but nonetheless couldn't pass the Tennessee bar, so much for his elite legal education at Georgetown, undergraduate and University of Michigan Law School. Decided that he'd rather be a commentator on CNN than have to deal with the nuts and bolts of being a congressman from the 9th District of Tennessee, where most of his constituents, or many of his constituents, were constantly asking him for favors to do this, that, and the other. It must be a tiresome task. But nonetheless, Cohen got the position, and there are certain members in the black community in Memphis, like a certain well-known radio host, and apparently Willie Harrington, think that it's some type of great injustice that someone other than a black person would hold this position.
And that basically sets the stage for what will undoubtedly become a political contest that is fought along racial lines. There is not a bigger dealer in race politics in this city than Willie Harrington, the 20-year mayor. And he is going up against Steve Cohen, a man who, as you have said, Keith, has never met a liberal bandwagon that he didn't jump on. But this was the guy who was embarrassed in front of the nation for trying to grovel and pander to the black congressional caucus, asking to be accepted as a member, even though he is white or Jewish, whichever you prefer. He's not black either way you slice it. And they turned him out on his head. And, I don't know, Keith, if I really believed that there was a such thing as racism in this country, that would be a pretty damn good example of it. But, of course, Cohen, because his district is almost entirely black, did not dare say that this was a race-based organization, a racially exclusive organization, the Congressional Black Caucus, which, of course, is a collection of black congressmen, as the name suggests. He didn't once go after them. In fact, he only increased his groveling and pandering to the black community. And I tell you, the blacks really don't respect that. And they shouldn't, because it's a joke. And anyway, Cohen versus Harrington. Keith, I can't wait to see what happens here. And I will say this, since we don't have a dog in the fight, no matter who wins, we lose, I certainly want Harrington to wipe the floor with Cohen. Now, why would I want that, Keith?
Well, what's more dangerous, a wolf or a wolf in sheep's clothing? And Cohen, even though he's white, has nothing whatsoever to offer to the white constituents of that district. Never has, never will. And Harrington, on the other hand, just seems to be a typical corrupt black politician. And on the other hand, Steve Cohen is a full-blown cultural Marxist.
Hang on, Keith. We got 5 seconds. We're going to pick this up. I'm telling you, folks, take down your pen and paper and take notes on what we're saying. You're going to be reading and watching this congressional race unfold on national television come next year. We'll be back with more right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life for me.
If I didn't tell her, I didn't. Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show. Keith Alexander and I kicking back this first hour of tonight's live broadcast on the 4th of July, Independence Day. We're here at the studio working for you. And Keith, we've talked a little bit about the conference last week where we did the remote broadcast. We talked about our experience on Tuesday as we were interviewed by a very prominent European newspaper. And now we're talking about the big congressional race that is sure to make national news come next year when we really get into the political silly season. It's Memphis Mayor Willie Harrington, black guy, versus the Jewish Steve Cohen, both Democrats, both ultra-liberal. Now, you mentioned, Keith, very accurately so, that obviously Cohen is much more dangerous because he's much smarter. But what I see here happening is that obviously, as is always the case, the blacks in this district are going to vote for their guy, and their guy is Harrington. And I think that would be almost poetic in a way that Steve Cohen, a man whose ethnic group has done so much to create these obscene political realities that we have to suffer through, that he would be shown the door by basically his own creation. It's like Frankenstein killing the inventor. You see where I'm going with this?
Remember, Frankenstein's monster pursued Dr. Frankenstein to the North Pole and back, and despite all the pandering that anyone could possibly muster, and certainly Steve Cohen has done that.
Well, you know, the thing is, when Cohen originally won this seat,
we're going to see exactly what happens in this election, because no one, quite frankly, could have done more for his black constituents than Cohen.
Now, that's the truth.
If they don't support him, that will be the acid test.
Well, that's exactly right. No one could have pandered more and groveled more and embarrassed themselves more in order to placate the black majority of this district than Cohen did. And by all accounts, for them, he did them a good job. I mean, he was certainly their...
Well, some of the black elite are supporting him, but I have the feeling from listening to this particular radio announcer and others that a lot of people, black constituents in the street, are going to support Harrington.
Well, when push comes to shove, but blacks are ethnocentric, and that's a good thing. That's natural, healthy. I am not saying that in a derogatory way whatsoever. I wish our people were more so. But the reason Cohen was able to win a few years back was that there was not a consensus black candidate, and in fact, there's about 24 of them on the ballot.
Yeah. And most of them were gadflies, people that didn't have political experience and were not very attractive candidates.
Many of them were, but the fact is Cohen has held office before in this city. He was more polished. He has run campaigns. He has money. So he was able to kind of clean up the mess and come out a little bit ahead of the pack. But in this situation, King Willie is boss dog. He's boss hog around here in the black community, and he will get all of these underlings in line, and there will not be two dozen black candidates to split the vote. And Cohen is going to understand what racism is all about.
Yeah, but he will probably not draw the lesson from it either. You know, they say there's none so blind as he who will not
see. Well, no, I'm not saying he's going to learn the lesson, but I'm just glad that he is going to be shown the door.
Right. Well, you know, here's
in
what,
part because of the political ideologies that he preaches.
Well, you're absolutely right, and like you said, I think that he's more dangerous than Harrington because he's basically Nancy Pelosi's lapdog up in Washington.
Well, and he's on all of this hate crime stuff, and he wants to make criminals out of people who practice the freedom of speech. Harrington is just going to be up there to line his own pockets. I mean, that's all he's ever done as mayor of Memphis.
That.
You know what you're going to get
with
him.
After the black constituency. But, for example, let's take a look at this cap-and-trade legislation that passed the House of Representatives with Steve Cohen's yes vote last week. Well, Harrington's liable to take the position, hey, this is going to raise utility bills on my constituents, many of whom can ill afford to pay more for utilities. In fact, a lot of them can't pay for utilities now. So consequently, he's liable to vote against it, where Steve Cohen will say, well, if it's a hard left position, where do I sign up?
Well, how do you see it shaking out, Keith? I know we're a year and a half away. This is November of 2010, not 2010, November of 10, I guess you would say, 2010. How do you see it shaking out in the long run?
I think Harrington will win in a close race, but let me just say this. I'm not if there is a good conservative candidate that shows up on the horizon, by all means, vote for him. But I would not, under any circumstances, assume that Cohen is, a better choice for, let's say, conservative people in the Memphis-Shelby County area than Harrington. In fact, I think that you would be, voting for a wolf in sheep's clothing. He hasn't done anything that is remotely conservative while he's been a congressman. In fact, he's, you can depend on him to be one of the most solid votes for the hard left in the United States Congress, and for that reason alone, he ought to be defeated.
Well, and when you're talking about the ultra-left, what you're really saying is he's anti-Christian and truly anti-American as far as that goes. But nevertheless, Keith, I think this is going to be a very, very dirty race. I mean, this is going to be a race that is fought on racial lines. And you've got the black guy playing to the crowd and the white guy trying to be black or the Jewish guy trying to be black, and that's not going to fly in the black community.
No, they're not going to – no, the constituencies out there are not going to –
And Harrington plays dirty. You know that.
Well, look, Harrington has already been on record as calling he had his interview with the local hard-left weekly newspaper. I think every community has one, or every urban community does. And he called Steve Cohen an a-hole. He called him had some other choice comments about him, and even some of the people that were going to run for the city mayor position that he supposedly is going to vacate next week on July the 10th. So, Willie Harrington was a former Golden Gloves boxer, and he makes a big deal of that. He had some ballyhooed publicity stunt where he had a boxing match with Joe Frazier, and he's coming out swinging in this campaign, and he realizes that Cohen really can't lay a glove on him, because if he says something negative about Harrington, it can be construed as saying something negative about the black constituency. So he's trying to be above the fray, and quite frankly, I don't think that's going to impress the average man in the street.
Well, you don't win a political match that's fought in the gutter by staying on the streets, and Cohen will try to take the high road. Not that he's morals. He's certainly anything but.
Now, if it was a conservative, he's just ill-equipped.
He's ill-equipped for this fight in this district. Yeah, he's ill-equipped for this fight in this district. But, Keith, why will this be national news? I mean, not only is it a congressional race, but I really think that you'll be hearing, I think people outside of West Tennessee will be hearing more about this race than some of the other congressional battles in 2010.
Well, I think it's going to be national news because here is a white elected representative of a majority black congressional district, one that was, as Harrington and some of his supporters have pointed out, was specifically gerrymandered under the Voting Rights Act of 1965 to elect a black. And somehow this white liberal Democrat has gotten elected. And, I mean, you know, predictably, despite everything that Steve Cohen has done, no one could have done more for those constituents. But, you know, the black political machine in town is going after him hammer and tongs.
As if he was, you know, yeah, this is something that they did last time.
He couldn't get more opposition if he were the head of the Ku Klux Klan.
Well, and that's just the point. Nikki Tinker was his primary rival, a black woman here in town. And Steve Cohen is an ultra-radical leftist Jew. And they were running him as if he were a white supremacist. They even had commercials running, Keith, you'll remember, because Cohen went on record saying that we perhaps shouldn't rename Nathan Bedford Forest Park, and they had a picture of a hooded Klansman and a burning cross with Steve Cohen's face superimposed. I mean, and this is a radical Marxist Jewish guy, ultra-liberal.
Yeah, that's the only thing you can say. You know, we keep talking about him being Jewish. Well, the reality is that Jewish Americans are the most left-wing part of the white population. They vote 4 out of 5 for the Democratic candidate for president in every presidential election. You know, that's nobody's opinion. That's verified fact from the Census Bureau and from the electoral results. And furthermore, of the 20% that don't, approximately half of them vote for candidates that are even further to the left on the spectrum, like Ralph Nader, for example.
Well, Keith, we've got a couple of seconds till break, and you're exactly right once again. And that's the thing that people hate most about this show, at least our enemies, is that we base everything we advocate on this program on fact. And the facts are that this is the case, and this is why we bring up his ethnicity as a reason for his liberalism.
I have nothing against the ethnicity. I just have liberal and conservative that I keep in mind. And if someone is a liberal, then they're on the opposite side of the fence from me. I'm conservative. And when someone is an enemy of conservatism, I take note of that, and I think everybody ought to.
Well, Keith, whether it's local, national, or global news, we will keep them posted in the political cesspool. We'll keep tabs on this race. I guarantee you it is going to be a fun one to watch. Keith, thanks for being on tonight. Go grab your bottle of hooch and enjoy the rest of your holiday. We'll see you next week, buddy, and I'll see everyone else in the second hour. Don't go anywhere.
Take care.
The political cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and says, something's got a hold on me. Yeah! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church, in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit and blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room, all the way down to the A.